Senate will come back to order. Do we have a quorum, Madam Chief Clerk? I don't know if we do. Let's see.
Yes, we do.
We do? Okay. Reports from standing committees.
January 12, 2017. Mr. President, your committee number 3, to whom was referred Senate File 9, Certification of Cases to State Board of Equalization, respectfully reports back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Okay, bills on second reading. Senator Rothfuss.
I have the privilege of the floor.
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would like to introduce in the gallery behind us our new city councilman, Charles McKinney, as well as our new mayor, Andy Somerville. I'd like the Senate to welcome him to the legislature.
Welcome. Okay, bill on second reading, Senate File 20. We have an amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, we have the amendment read in.
Would you please read the amendment in, the reading clerk?
Senate File 20, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move the amendment. And, Mr. President, just to review, the amendment takes off the effective date, so that gives us license to talk about the whole bill as to what we're doing.
Senator Scott,
designed that way.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think we have to talk within the meaning of the amendment.
Well, the meaning amendment is really relates to the whole bill, Mr. President, so that we can see is it a good idea to do the amendment.
Senator Scott, I'm going to disagree with you on that. I think that the amendment clearly should speak to the effective date and why you want to remove the effective date and speak to that.
And, okay, Mr. President.
You can have an option of overruling me, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I don't want to get into that. Mr. President, I will say that I think it's a bill that shouldn't ever go into effect, and I think the amendment does that. Or if so, that it should be greatly delayed going into effect. And, Mr. President, I would say to the Senate that this is a close call, that you don't want unnecessary snooping into students' private affairs, and you want to give the students as much privacy as possible. On the other hand, we're talking adolescents here. They're not adults. Their brains are still in the process of developing. And they can do some things that are pretty harmful. And these come to the attention of the school authorities that there might be something going on. You hear so-and-so is upset. You hear something on the cell phone. You hear that maybe they've been threatening to harm somebody. You hear maybe they've been threatening to commit suicide, and we do have a problem in that area. Or suppose it's something much more prosaic. You heard they took a picture of Mr. Seedy's American history exam and are circulating. That's a school disciplinary matter. But you want to know, did they really do it or not? And I think it's reasonable to say, in the first instance, let the school officials who are known to the students, who have a reputation with them, who can don't have to take the strict actions that, say, maybe a police would. Say, you know, Susie, what's on your phone? Let me see. I think sooner or later, if we allow this bill to go into effect, you will have a situation where we miss something because the school people are afraid to take the necessary steps to find out is there really a problem or not. And you have a suicide. And so while I see a balance, I really don't have a dog in this fight, but I think on balance, we are better off without. And so, Mr. President, I would urge us to adopt the amendment and done.
Discussion on amendment. Ready for the question? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would urge us to oppose the amendment and to move this on to third reading. Mr. President, I'm thinking of these examples that it was discussed yesterday. Usually when someone is circulating a picture of an exam or circulating compromising photos of someone, maybe broadcasting thoughts that or articulating thoughts that they're considering suicide, God forbid, Mr. President, other people are involved. Other students receive that. They're in the email tree or whatever you want to call it. So any one of those students can go to the attention of the authorities. That's how they're going to find out anyway. How are they going to know that Johnny's circulating pictures of an exam? Because they heard it from another student. It's on the other student's phone, for example. The other student can say, look, this is what Johnny's doing. That's perfectly within the right of this bill. What you're trying to, we're trying to figure out is a situation where we have no idea what's on that phone. There's no other way to get to it through another person, and yet you still want to make that legal for the administrator to apparently exert some kind of force, I guess, or threat or repercussion for making him hand over that phone. It's very difficult for me to actually envision that that would happen. I think there always will be a third party involved. That's how you're actually going to find out. That's how it's going to begin to develop. That's how you get Johnny down to the principal's office and you say, Johnny, you know, you can hand it over voluntarily or we can call your folks. And or law enforcement if it's that serious. If it's certainly a situation, Mr. President, regarding self-harm, it seems like the same rule applies. Don't you want the parents involved? Don't you want the police involved? So, Mr. President, I don't see the reason for this. I think we need more discussion, and I kind of object to the whole procedure of doing this on second reading in a way, Mr. President, not an official objection. But I think it kind of cuts our process short. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Rossless.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment, we did have a robust discussion, and it was good debate, but there were senators absent, and I appreciate the opportunity to come back today due to the change in vote and the procedural change. But, Mr. President, doing this on second reading isn't a necessary thing. It doesn't have to fail here, and if we want a full, robust debate with the possibility of opportunity for additional amendment, additional discussion, two speeches each on a topic other than the expiration date or I should say effective date of the legislation, then we can get rid of this amendment. We can accept the legislation. We can come back on third reading and do this the right way. So this is not out of order in my view, but at the same time, let's not do it this way. I just encourage folks to take this to a third reading. Let's do it right. Let's not set a precedent that this is how we kill bills. It was a good debate. There's about half of us on one side, Mr. President. There's about half of us on the other side. Let's take it to third reading. Let's do this right. And vote it up or vote it down on third reading. That's what I'd ask the body. So vote no now. Vote no on the motion to kill this bill on second reading. Let's take it to third reading. And if you choose to vote against it at that point in time, I'm perfectly comfortable with it, but I'd prefer that process, Mr. President. I hope you'll support that position. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Wasserburger.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President. The first time that I was ever involved in a bill that was a attempted to be killed on second reading was many years ago. And I think that at that time there were a lot of people who were, at least in the House side, were not happy about that. And it did cause problems. But one of the things that we found out is that you could actually do that. And I have to defend my colleague from Natrona County. He didn't do that to kill the bill. You remember he voted no, but then he switched his vote because his personal ethics were so strong that he felt that the five members of the Appropriations Committee should be here. And that was the right thing to do in my mind. Having said that, let's go to the amendment itself. And I would say that we have talked this to a great point, but I do believe that the status quo that we have based under the TLO versus New Jersey case and reasonable suspicion allows principals to search if they can establish that, guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment, is the right way to go. I do think this is an exception, but I would ask the body to vote for the amendment and against the bill.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, with all due respect, I was one of the people off the floor, and I would like to hear some arguments for this bill. I'd like to hear the reasons why this bill is a good idea. I'm leaning against it. The only arguments I've heard so far in favor of the bill is against the process of killing the bill on second reading. My predecessor in my Senate seat always told me you kill the snake when you can kill the snake. So the idea of killing it first or second or third reading doesn't matter to me at all, but I'd like to hear some of the arguments of why this bill is a good idea.
Okay, Senators, let's think about. Well, before we do, I'd like to make a couple comments before we vote on this second reading amendment. First of all, I think Senator Scott, my colleague from Natrona County, and I hear from my colleague from Campbell County, our colleagues, about the fairness, and I think that's a very accurate thing to think about. A close vote, five people are off the floor. For those that are working on this bill, it's a sensitive area, and we should give it full opportunity for a correct vote. So I think the process to get here and not to eliminate the bill yesterday was done correctly. We have several options today. We can vote this amendment up or down. But what happens in reality, if you vote for this amendment, you delete the effective date, but it will become effective anyway in 90 days if this bill should pass. We still have the same issue. You know, if I decide to go ahead and move this on to the third reading, if my colleague from Natrona County wants to object. Okay, if he's going to object, there's two things that can happen, and this is going to be my ruling. One is he can object on a procedural motion basis. There's something wrong with the way it's drafted, something we did, whatever that might be the case, and that is not debatable. And we will not allow that to be debated and call the vote. And then all you've done is delay the same question, shall this bill be read a third time, and tomorrow we'll come back and I'll have the same thing, shall this bill be read a third time, and the next day and the next day. I don't think we want to delay that. The other thing that we could do is we could have that, you know, when he objects to going to the third reading, we can have it be to indefinitely postpone. And I would rule that in order. And then my colleague from Sheridan County, we could debate the bill. Or very simply, we could do whatever we want to do with this amendment. Let's go to third reading, and let's have it whenever third reading is, and then you can have full debate and decide on the vote up or down. I will leave that up to the body, but those will be my rulings. Further discussion on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, for my second time, and understand that I think it's a mistake, but my colleague did make a reasonable request. What are the arguments for the bill? And I can see this one, I can certainly see both sides of. I think the argument for is that you want to protect the individual privacy of those students, even recognizing that they are adolescent, they're not fully adult, the schools have some responsibilities for them. But even recognizing that, you do want to protect their privacy. I think that's the argument for. Now, Mr. President, having said that, and hearing what you say the effect of the amendment will be, I think the better part of wisdom is, with your permission, I will withdraw the amendment. And then the Senate rules provide that the final question on second reading of every bill, shall the bill be read a third time? And what I would do is request the yeas and nays on that proposition. Which okay. is in accordance with the rules, I believe. So first I'm asking your permission to withdraw the amendment.
Without objection, so noted. The amendment is withdrawn. There being no further amendments on Senate File 20, the bill having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third term? Hearing no objection?
No, Mr. President. I've asked for the yeas and nays on that question.
To withdraw the amendment?
No, the yeas and nays on what the rules describe as the final questions. Should the bill be read a second time?
Third time,
yeah. Should it be read a third time? And that's the procedure we followed in the Senate consistently. You can ask for the yeas and nays on that question, and a yea vote causes it to be read the third time. A nay vote causes it not to be read a third time ever, and effectively kills the bill.
And I'm going to rule, and there's two ways I just went through this, Senator Scott. The first thing, if we do that, it could be our procedural, which means it goes on. So what we're doing is we're talking about an indefinite postponement of that. And if we, in fact, do that, it is debatable. Okay?
Okay. If so.
Senator Scott, please address the chair.
Mr. President, let me see if I understand. I've requested the yeas and nays in the proposition of going to the third time. And it's not on a procedural basis. It's on a basis that the bill should have been defeated yesterday if we'd all been here. So the effect, my understanding of the Senate rules and precedents, is that the effect of a nay vote is to defeat the bill.
Senator Scott, the motion would be to object to going to a third reading. It's debatable. And if you object to going to the third reading, then it will not be go to the third reading and is effectively killed.
So
that's your motion. Okay, I'm going to rule that in order, and it's debatable. So we're going to debate the bill. And members of the Senate, we're debating whether the bill should be indefinitely postponed or not, which means it'll either be off the table or it'll go on to third reading. So what's the pleasure of the Senate? We're opening the debate for the bill.
Question.
Okay, the yeas and nays have been called for. Will the reading clerk please read the roll? Mr. Vice President.
Could I have a clarification of what we're voting on? Is a yay vote to move it on, or is a nay vote to kill? I mean, I'm a little lost myself on that.
The motion that Senator Scott has made, he's objected to going to third reading. That requires the ayes and nays. I have made the ruling that would be an indefinite postponement of the bill. Okay? So if you vote aye, not to go to a third reading, you voted to indefinitely postpone the bill.
Is it a...
Mr. Vice President,
I just want to clarify, this is a negative motion or a positive motion. Is it to move on? So you've made the motion that this bill, without objection, shall move on. So if we vote aye, yes, we want to move it on a third reading. If we vote no, we indefinitely postpone it.
That's correct, Mr.
Okay,
Vice President.
Vote aye to move it on. No
aye, problem. You vote to move it on, it goes to third reading. If you vote no, the bill is indefinitely postponed today, and we don't have to deal with it tomorrow. Okay, Senator Burns and everybody else, we're open for debate. That's debatable. Anyone wish to debate the bill?
Question.
Question being called for. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Doughton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll? No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
No.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 12 aye, 18 no.
By your vote, you have voted to indefinitely postpone Senate File 20. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for consideration of the bills before us.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Christensen.
All right. Be safe. See you Monday.
Or getting home from the airport when you get there.
Thank you. These are our bills.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 13. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 13, Manufactured Alcoholic Beverages, an act relating to alcoholic beverages, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a recommendation that it do pass. Senators Agar, Nethercott, Pappas, Scott, and Eyes. Senator Case, conflict. Senator Case, chairman.
Senator Case, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 13, Manufactured Alcoholic Beverages. Mr. Chairman, there are not any standing committee amendments, and I'd like to yield. But before I do so, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to declare conflict on this bill. As all of you probably know, I have an interest in a hotel in Lander, a hotel, bar, and restaurant, and own a small piece of a liquor license. So I would like to go on record as a conflict on the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to yield to Senator Nethercott that will explain this great bill.
Senator Nethercott.
Yes, thank you, Chairman, members of the Senate. You have in front of you Senate File 13, which deals with a number of amendments and additional definitions concerning manufacturing and distillers of liquor. So if I can direct your attention to page 2, you can see the first amendment there on line 4 removes the term malt beverage. For your clarification, different statutory sections deal with malt beverages, so this deals with just liquor. You can see moving down the page there on line 11 that there's an additional provision added that at the time a distiller requests for a manufacturer requests a license, that at the time they should also provide their federal application materials as well. Moving down the page to line 20 and 21, we can see that there's a change where the term on-site has been stricken with language that makes just more sense for it to be at the site identified on the manufacturer's license. You will find that change throughout this particular bill, so I will not speak to it again. Moving to page 3 on line 2, you can see that this provision allows for distillers to allow for samples at their manufacturing location, and that's been increased from 2 ounces to 3 ounces. Moving on to page 4, you can see some of the more substantive amendments to this particular bill, which has to do with the addition of adding the defining language for a distiller, for what in operation means, manufacturer and manufactured, and those terms are self-explanatory, so I will let you take a look at those. And with that, Mr. Chairman, this bill is proposed to be enacted July 1st of 2017. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for a favorable consideration for Senate File 13.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, this is one of a package of several bills came through corporation in the liquor area. And I would comment that during the interim, we went over these very carefully in the Corporations Committee. The various interest groups, frankly, made an effort to make our liquor laws more business-friendly, more sensible, more workable. And I would say that, based in good part on what I saw during the interim, that they had done a very competent, very sincere effort. There was good participation, Mr. Chairman, from a number of people in the business, and I would urge the Senate that both this and several other bills we have in this area are well-done ones and deserving of careful consideration and will help not only the citizens but the people that are in this business to do business more efficiently, more effectively.
Senator Case.
And Mr. Chairman, I think those are both excellent presentations. I would just add that the crux of this bill is that it gets at the issue that the rectification or manufacture of alcohol, this is where you might take distilled spirits and add it to something to make a brandy or something, but that manufacturing actually has to happen at the site. And before, there was certainly an argument that there was a loophole that would allow large liquor outfits to have a small manufacturing facility here and not actually use that to manufacture their whole product line so that they could drive through the loophole to have a location in Wyoming. And this closes that loophole. That's basically the biggest reason for the bill. And so a lot of it is about defining what operations mean and what the site is. And this is a good bill. I think it's well-crafted, Mr. Chairman. Good presentation.
Senator Von Flatiron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just if somebody on the committee could tell me what the discussion was about page 2, line 4, where you struck out malt beverage. So this doesn't cover beer. It's just strictly, I mean, beer is alcohol. I mean, it has alcohol in it. So I'm curious what the difference and why that was struck out.
Senator Nethercutt.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding, Senator Van Flattern, is that malt beverages are dealt with in a different statutory section.
And if you could address the chair.
Yes.
Great. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, there we go. Just, again, a question for the committee, because I've never attended one of these samplers, the difference between 2 and 3 ounces. I know the difference between 2 and 3. What problems? I don't know what problems was caused. 2 ounces was causing these distributors. And why 3? Why not 15, 16, 20 ounces? I mean, can you help me with that discussion that you had there?
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not on the committee, but I'm familiar with the issue. There are currently 6 distilleries or distillers and rectifiers in the state. This is truly a homegrown economic diversification of the state. And the difference between 2 and 3, the reason that is coming is because some of these distillers are putting out additional products. Up in my part of the country, they are rectifying and have been for a number of years making a liqueur. Well, they now have a second liqueur, which is like a mint green or something. They are also now putting out vodka, and they're planning on distilling gin. They use basin sugar, and they grow their own grains, their own barley, their own corn. So this entire product is entirely from Wyoming. They use the basin sugar to actually make the alcohol. So I was amazed at that. I didn't realize all that at the time. But the only reason for going from 2 to 3 is because they are actually branching out and creating different products.
Senator Rothens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point also, if you look at the language on page 3, it's moving from 2 samples per consumer to not more than 3 ounces of samples per consumer. So you could technically try 10 different things if they were tiny little bits. But it is the same concept. I was just wondering if the committee had discussed removing those limits altogether. You think about it, and there's a lot of difference between alcohols. So we can be trying something that's a very high concentration of alcohol or something that's a third of the concentration, but we're on an ounce basis of the product. And I was just wondering if there was any discussion about trying to look at it differently. There may not have been. I don't know what that would be, but it seems like it's a little bit arbitrary as written.
Senator Scott, you've been...
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I think it was my amendment that did it in the interim. And I had looked over on page 2 where it says samples and quantities not to exceed 1.5 ounces and said, well, 1.5 ounces, you multiply that by 2, you get it 3 instead of 2. So it's as simple as that. And then I discovered that the industry favored that for the reason that my colleague from Sheridan County just elucidated. They have multiple products, and they want to be able to give people just a taste of each one. There was in the interim committee some discussion on the question, Mr. Chairman, that my colleague from Albany County just raised. And the discussion was that the 3 ounces was perfectly adequate. These are our tasting samples that are liquor before it gets taxed. And so it's untaxed product. And so the state is at risk if you allow too large a volume. Plus, they said, look, they're trying to give just tasting samples. They're not trying to distribute the product widely. It's a marketing tool rather than getting into the business of selling it at that point, which I think is not proper if you haven't paid the tax. So it was a combination of those factors. In fact, because they aren't allowed to sell the free samples, you know, you don't sell a free sample, they probably would limit it pretty much this way anyhow, but this does give a bright line standard that makes some sense.
Senator Perkins.
So, hi, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to understand this one a little bit. So, if I and make sure that we're not stepping our own necktie here. So, as I look at the bill, and if we go to 12.2.203A, and we're excluding the manufacture or rectification of alcoholic liquor or malt beverages, and so we're striking malt beverages. And so if I go elsewhere, if I go back up to 12.2.201, which is the wholesale license for malt beverages only, I guess what I'm trying to do is, what are we doing with, 201 deals with wholesale breweries, microbreweries, or wholesale sales of malt beverages, but it doesn't deal with the manufacture of malt beverages. I just want to make sure we're not messing up and making sure that we're not creating an issue where we don't have a licensing or we don't have a licensing for malt beverages. That's my only concern. I'm trying to figure out how this fits together, because in 201 it's only talking about wholesale distribution of malt beverages, and here we're talking about this. It seems to be removing the potential, or I don't know if it removed the license or make it so you couldn't manufacture malt beverages. I just want to make sure we're not shutting down breweries that's my concern. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to find that exact reference, but we have a microbrewery permit section that's different than the malt beverage section that the good senator is referring to. That malt beverage section is where a wholesaler is defined and they have a relationship with a retailer. But there is a different statute with respect to the manufacturing. And remember, that malt beverage section is distribution, but there is a section on manufacturing, and it's the microbrewery section. I'm looking for it, and I'll find it, but it is in a different section, and I will find it.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious on page 2, lines 15 and 16, this concept with the application that the site would be subject to on-site inspections by the division. Mr. Chairman, can we hear more about what that is getting at, why that's needed? Is that a new thing, or is that a practice that we already have underway that's being codified? I'm just curious how that got in there.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, a lot of this has been, this bill, the impetus for this bill was about whether someone was really having a manufacturing facility or not, or whether they were sort of stealthily saying that they had a manufacturing facility to use the loophole in the law that allows them to have samples and then on on-site sales. Because you can see that in this law that grants those manufacturers a location for on-site sales as well. They could actually sell their product. Now, Mr. Chairman, that's tax product. They bottle it. They send it back down to the Liquor Commission. They put a tax on it. It comes up, and it is sold at the site. But if you think about it, you could think that if you were a large distributor of distilled spirits and you wanted to have a loophole, you could say that you have a manufacturing facility in Wyoming, and it could look like a manufacturing facility, but is it actually a manufacturing facility? Is the still, so to speak, actually operated? And there was controversy about this on the western edge of Wyoming about whether the stuff actually was made in Wyoming or not. So a lot of the on-site inspection is regarding that exact situation, to make sure that it actually is made in Wyoming, and these stills don't operate all the time. They're little tiny operations, and so they do these batches. And they might not operate every day, might not operate even every month. So some of it is about the inspection. I do want to point out to the committee that when this bill originally came to us, we were in Saratoga at the time, the Revenue Division, the Liquor Division, they were proposing to be very heavy-handed and do inspections of installations and sort of more of a building code kind of inspections. And we removed that from the bill, saying that that's what the local licensing authorities or the local municipal and county authorities do, and so that was improper. So the inspections that you have here are with respect to this title and whether they're actually operating a distillery or rectification process and, to conform with the law. I hope that's helpful.
All right. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 13, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Senate File 13 has passed a Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is File 39. 26. Senate File 26.
Senate File 26, Game and Fish Licenses Confidentiality, an act relating to game and fish, sponsored by the Travel Committee, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report, it do so with favorable consideration of Senate File 26, Game and Fish Licenses Confidentiality. And for this secret little bill, I would like to ask that the good Senator Boner provide the details.
Senator Boner.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the purpose of this legislation is to allow, or it requires Game and Fish to give people an option to not reveal their personal identified information when they apply for a license, permit, or tag in that department. The concern here is that there's a significant amount of information that you have to give to the Game and Fish. Some of it is a matter of public concern. Others, such as an email address, is not necessary for the public. And frankly, that information was being used by various companies to engage in sending out a lot of advertisements to these folks who had applied for a license, permit, or tag. So we're attempting to strike that balance between knowing who draws a tag, who doesn't, and who gets access to our public asset, which is our Game and Fish in this state, with not putting out information on the public record that is unnecessary. So that's the idea behind the bill. You can see it's basically just a page long, and if you turn your attention to page 2, you'll see exactly when you get to lines 12 and 15 what is under this section qualifies as personally identifiable information. You'll see it's items such as email addresses, social security numbers, and just as importantly, what is not in there is the person's name, their physical address, the area or tag that they've drawn, the specifics about what license or tag they've obtained, and they have the option of providing a phone number. But the important part is the public still knows who gets these tags while giving them the option. Once again, this is the option that the individual has when they give the department this information, to not have all that extra information you see starting on line 12 become public record. So that's the bill in a nutshell. I'll certainly stand for any questions.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, does anybody want to opt into this? Was there any testimony that people really wanted this information released publicly, or should this be an opt-in instead of an opt-out, where if for some reason you want your information released, you have that ability, but by default the PII is unreleased? Or perhaps a further question is why would we even make this optional at all? Why would we release their personally identifiable information for these? I understand the name, address, and tag concept. It sounds like that needs to be released, but would it be reasonable, or was there testimony against just by default and without exception having a shall and not releasing any of that other material?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I can probably answer that last question. When you turn it over, the optional component in there, if you go to, where are we at here? Page 2, line 12. Where it talks about the applicant's email address. And it's pretty standard across the Western United States that once you apply for these licenses, there's a lot of marketers that will get that database. And whether it's numerous sporting goods stores or firearm stores and stuff, and if you want on that list so that you get all that, they'll just get the list from the state agency. So the other stuff, I don't think that you probably want to opt in, but it's not uncommon for sportsmen across the states to opt in to allow the departments to use to distribute their email address.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate that explanation from the good senator, and this bill was well presented. I just had a curiosity. I assume this information it's all optional, and when you're stopped by a game warden, for example, the department still has all the information they need back behind the firewall. I'm assuming that's how that works. Or maybe he can just ask for your telephone. Check your cell phone. Senator, what's the story on that front?
Senator Landon, if you'd address the chair, that'd be great.
Slap your hand. I heard that whack.
Senator Boner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, being new to the committee, I can't speak to all the discussion that happened during the interim. But speaking generally, I think it's important to draw the distinction between what may be convenient for an individual to use to communicate with the department back and forth, and what needs to be made public, and whether it be in the office or in the field, as my good colleague from Charles County pointed out with his example. I think it's important to make that distinction, and I could certainly be proven wrong, but that would be my initial inclination.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just following up on my previous question, I guess I didn't get a clear answer why it is opt-out rather than opt-in in the statute allowing for that, when the response I heard suggests that it's typically kind of an opt-in type circumstance. Should we switch the language of the statute and amend it so that it explicitly indicates there should be a procedure to opt-in to release and then default to not releasing? Would that be reasonable? Maybe I'm missing something.
Yes, Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand this bill as it was read, you're automatically opted in, and so if you want to opt out, you have the option of being opt out. Also, there's a lot of information on this application for a license, even your tax ID number, and a lot of things that I can't give them to you right now personally, but I would be glad to come back tomorrow and give you all the other little things. But it was a lot of information that nobody else except you really needs to have. And so if you want to opt out, you can. So that's what's happening.
Senator Anselmi.
I think I don't think we discussed it in the committee today, just to answer Senator Rothfuss's question, Chairman. And we could ask the Game and Fish if they – I think it would be maybe better to
– Senator Anselmi, if you could address the chair and not use names.
Oh, sorry.
Great. Mr. President. Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, members of the Senate, please respect the chair. I've heard several people. I'm not picking on our newly elected from Sweetwater County, but just proper decorum, so I would ask that you address the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Anselmi.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Anselmi, please.
I would like to answer his question and say that perhaps we should I wouldn't be opposed. I was in the committee. We did not ask the question of the Game and Fish whether it should be shall instead of may on page 2, line 3, and it might be an appropriate amendment.
Thank you. Other discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my fishing license is in my truck, and so I didn't have it handy. But I can't remember if my – does my fishing license have my Social Security number on it?
No.
Not anymore. And so – but it does have the lies I tell about my height and weight, though. It has some of that information, and along with my name and my address and some things like that. And my recollection is that sometimes after I register for things, I get stuff in the mail. And so as we do that – that personal identifiable information would include, I guess, the items listed there on lines 11 through 14. And that is there any other kind of personal identifying information on the same license? I just don't remember because you just kind of fill them out as a matter of fact anymore.
Senator Moniz.
Mr. Chairman, I might just add that the Wyoming Press Association was in total support of this bill, which was a shocker for us. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to get back to, I think, to try to answer some of the questions, and particularly from my colleague from the Ivory Towers, is number one, this gives the commission the ability to establish a process. But more importantly, I think, is what it does which isn't currently protected under existing law. So if you go to page 2 and you go through down to line 10, that's the Wyoming Public Records Act. And right now, that personal information is not shielded under the Wyoming so it's not necessarily an opt-in, opt-out. The bigger question is can anybody walk in, file a public records request, and get all of this personal information from you? So what this effectively does is put that information that is exempt from the Wyoming Public Records Act. If somebody couldn't go in to, and file a Records Act from Game and Fish, and then they spend, I mean, there's literally hundreds of thousands of applications with all this personal information. Right now, under the laws of the state of Wyoming, they'd have to disclose that information. So I think in the bigger picture, that's really what this speaks to.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am very new to this issue, but I'm curious to know what information we share to participate in the Interstate Wildlife Violator Compact so that if someone's had their hunting and fishing licenses revoked in other states, how we would access that information, or if that information is collected would somehow be affected by what we're trying to achieve here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I was on the interim committee and sat through the presentation of this. And the presentation was that the sportsmen did not want to have their email address out, and they were not wanting that information out. Of course, they don't want their Social Security number out. So that's why it says the department shall do it. The department also would like to have the authority to not produce that information, but they have to have that authority from the individual. We cannot say they just automatically don't say that information, don't give that information out. It has to be the individual saying he does not want that information given out. So that's why it's an opt-out deal instead of an opt-in. So that was the explanation we got at the session. So they wanted the sportsman to say that he did not want his information out. The other information that you have on that is your hunter number, your sportsman number. That sportsman number relates everything for the department. So if that individual game and fish guy is in the field and he pulls you over, he does have all that information. It's just that it's not made public. And that's what we're requesting here is don't make this information public, because so many people are getting so many offers in the mail or in their email. So that's what we were trying to do. That's why the shall is in there, and that's why we identified the personally identified information. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I thought I understood this, but the explanation I just heard, I'm a little concerned. So if this bill passes, am I supposed to let them know that I don't want my information to go out? I would rather have it the other way, that I have to tell them and say, let it out. And which way does the bill do it? Do I have to tell them that I don't want it out, or that I have to tell them that I do want it out?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, the testimony was that the Game and Fish wanted you to tell them you did not want your information out. And that would be on your license or whatever your application was, it would be on there, and you could opt out of any of your information being given out.
President?
Well, Mr. Chairman, most people will not pay any attention. I mean, they won't really be doing that, so a lot of that information still goes out. I would rather say that you have to want it to go out and protect the individuals. Wouldn't that be a better way to do it?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, there was a discussion about that. The department wanted it. You opt out. You tell us you don't want it in there. Well, now, obviously, we can change that any way we want.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I think the bill does that, so I'm just going to bring your attention. So if we go to line 5 and you start at the word except, so it says except as otherwise provided by law, personal identifiable information designated as confidential pursuant to this section is now going to go into the Wyoming Public Records Act, and it's only available for the law enforcement purposes. So your personal information is going to be locked up, It's not open for public to be able to come in there and do a Public Records Act request for that. And it could only be used for personal information, for game and fish. And then they have the definition that says personal identifiable information. So I think it does that. It actually protects all that data automatically, the way I read the bill, because of it says the exemption. So I think it does that, the way I read the language.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I kind of disagree with my good colleague over there because I start at line one, the commission shall establish a process by which an applicant for any game and fish license permit or tag authorized by his act. Those words there on line three, authorized by his act may designate as confidential. So it reads to me the way the good president was discussing that it looks like it's saying that, and from what senator from Casper was explaining that, you know, that it looks like that if the agency had asked for the opt-out option, that's what this says. It looks to me like we need to amend it if we want it the way the president was thought it should have been, the way I thought it should be also.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, just to add to what my friend from Sweetwater County was just talking about, I think what the language from line five on, that personally identifiable information is described below. And so it still allows the Game and Fish Department to distribute all the rest of the information that they have on you, which is you can get mail and whatever else. And so I'm really glad that we brought this bill. I've learned quite a bit today. I'm like the president. I really didn't realize that all of this information was going out. I'm glad to know that they still have the information they need. If they pull me over out in the countryside, that they have that information behind a firewall somewhere. But there's still a bunch of information here that's going to go out to the world. And I honestly, I don't think my constituents knew that was happening. I don't know that when you go in and buy a fishing license that they realize that that's going to be disseminated across the world, Mr. Chairman. So I think if we want that piece tightened up, I think it's going to take an amendment to do that. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if we do tighten that up and the addresses can't get out, how much revenue is the Game and Fish going to lose by that it may be now be gaining by selling those mailing lists?
Senator Anselmi.
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
We can still sell the mailing lists. It's the electronic email address that we're addressing on line 12 of page 2 as the personally identifiable information, so they could still sell it.
Any other discussion? Senator Emmerich.
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware that the Game and Fish is selling any lists, but they have been accused of selling information, and that's the purpose of this bill, because there have been various sportsmen's groups have come to the Game and Fish and said, why are you giving out my information? Well, they're not giving it out. The law requires that they must submit all of this information to a requester. There is a large retailer in a state east of us who has people that just wait for the license list to come out, and they attack the email addresses primarily. All the information is still going to be kept by the Game and Fish, but there is a certain degree of this information which is casting both the Game and Fish and some others in bad lights because of the accusation that we're selling the lists and making a whole stack of cash. I don't recall that they're selling. They're just allowing the information to go out through the Public Records Act, and we're just trying to control the amount of information to placate the hunters groups who are not real tickled with it.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly appreciate the discussion on this piece of legislation. I just want to take a moment to respond to my colleague from Southwest Laramie County and say that I don't know the exact answer. I'd imagine if that would be working within the Game and Fish departments or their equivalents in other states, but I can verify that for sure. I would not think that cooperation would be affected, but I can verify that when I talk to the director soon after we adjourn, or maybe even before. So if you have any more questions, certainly be willing to answer them, but for that, I'd call for the question.
There's been a call for the question. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 26, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 26 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk would read the Senate file.
Senate File 39, Military Department Composition, sponsored, an act relating to the Military Department, sponsored by the Transportation Department, was referred to committee number 8, which returned back a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee in the whole rise to report, it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 39, Military Department Composition. There is a standing committee amendment and a committee of the whole amendment. I ask that the reading clerk read these in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendments? Two.
Senate File 39, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment at this time and ask that the reading clerk now read in the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 39.
Point of order.
Can we have two amendments on the floor at one time?
No.
Okay.
You got to have one amendment only.
Senator Bonflater.
Right. We can have a second amendment. You'd have to do this Committee of the Whole Amendment first, then do this other amendment. You could amend the amendments, but
okay, I was just
if
trying
they're
to say
unrelated,
the
you can't have two.
All right. Okay, Mr.
Vice President, help me here if you would. I think we have to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment before the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you couldn't have two amendments on the floor at the same time.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, to explain this bill, I would turn that explanation over to the good senator from Torona County to explain both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment. And the standing committee amendment was moved, Mr. Chairman.
Standing committee amendment has been read in and moved. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would draw your attention to the handout that you got at your desk about the makeup of the Wyoming Military Department. And this is what this is all about today. We have changed the name of the commander of the Wyoming Military Department. He used to be called the COS, and that wasn't bad. He was a chief of staff, and the federal military changed the name to Adjutant General, so we're just complying with what the federal law is doing. And this military department is all federal. All of our Army National Guard and Air National Guard is federal, paid by the federal. The only employee we have in this is the Adjutant General and the Director of the Veterans Commission. So all this is funded by the federal government. So we have to comply with what the military does. So I'd like to walk through the bill with the Standing Committee Amendment in it, and get through that and get that approved. On page 1, or page 2, We would put in the state military affairs. We added that after general. We have general, comma, state military affairs and those divisions that may be authorized, and then we put in by federal or state authority. So the reason we had to put in federal or state authority, the two organizations, the Veterans Administration and the Director of Military Affairs, are both state organizations, not federal. So we put in both of those. On line 10, we did the same thing, state military affairs after general. On line 12, on page 2, we did the same thing, federal or state authority. So down on line 18, you'll see chief of staff is marked out, and then it's the commander of the National Guard and director of the Wyoming Military Department. On page 3, we changed the wording from adjutant to adjutants, because we have 4 adjutants now in the Wyoming Military Guard. General officers, general officers. Then on page 4, we have a... I have to wait for that. We have a sentence there starting on page 5. The senior adjutant, assistant adjutant general for either Army or Air National Guard, and it's by date of rank and is then currently available, et cetera, for the replacements. If none are available, such duties shall be executed by the senior general officer. That's all new. That's all new from the federal organizations. That was not in the bill. So that would include all of the Standing Committee Amendment 01 to Senate File 39, and I'd like to vote on that now if we could.
The Standing Committee Amendment has been moved. There's a request. All those in favor of Senator Case's, Senator Myers' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment. Please, Mr. Vice President.
There was no ask of discussion or point of discussion. It was just that he asked and you started the vote. So, I mean, there may not be, but...
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to clarify, I may have misheard my good friend from Natrona County, and we talked about it's all federal funds. Just to let you know, and I don't have the budget bill, but I have the proposed... governor's recommendation for the biennium. I pulled that up, and the proposed budget, and that's not exactly, it ended up a little bit different than this, but the proposed budget had a total of a little over $70 million in the military department, of which a little over 17 was general fund, about 50 million were federal funds, and then there was another about $3.6 million of other funds. So there are general funds in the military department. I just want to make sure everybody does understand that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Yes, Senator Meyer.
I think that the good senator from Natrona County was talking about the wages, the 100 series that were applied to this. And essentially what he said was correct as far as the wages that most of these people are paid for by the federal government. If you see the other $7 million, that's probably for some cost shares in buildings and guard facilities and things like that. Not having the budget in front of me, but recalling my JAC days, that's probably what we have as far as the lion's share of that.
Senator Meyer, that is a great answer to the question, but was the question on the amendment or on the bill? Or the statement, I guess it was more of a statement. We were in the process of the amendment at the time.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I think the discussion is on the bill and not on the amendment.
Senator Von Flatering.
We are on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. On the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? All right. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 39. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 39 has passed. We are back on the bill.
Read in, hasn't it?
Senator Anderson.
Oh, didn't they read it in? Oh. I'd like to have Committee of the Whole number 1 read into Senate File number 39.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 39, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, page 4, line 6.
The amendment is read in. Discussion, presentation on the amendment. Senator Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The amendment simply moves on page 4, moves the objection was that we had Army or Air, and it should have Army National Guard and Air National Guard, page 4, line 6. So it just puts in National Guard on 4 and 6, and then page 4, line 9, it also puts in National Guard and Army National Guard. Now I need to move the amendment. I'd like to move the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 39.
Thank you. We'd like you to move it also. Call for the question.
Yeah.
All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 39 has passed. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Further discussion. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, when I was explaining the organization chart, I didn't mean to imply that State of Wyoming didn't put up money for the military. They certainly do. I was just talking about the adjutants that we're talking about in this bill. So I appreciate the good Vice President pointing out that State of Wyoming does put up a lot of money for the military in Wyoming, and we just don't pay for a lot of the generals that we have. So thank you.
Thank you. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Myers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 39, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 39 has passed to Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. Will the reading clerk read the Senate file?
Senate File 27, State Archives Amendments, an act relating to archives, sponsored by the Travel Committee, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with favorable consideration of Senate File 27, State Archives Amendments, and for a thorough and sterling discussion of this little bill, I would like to refer to Senator Bernard.
Senator Bernard.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is kind of a cleanup of the State Archives statutes and procedures. At first, it looks like it's just going to be an easy type of a deal, but as you look into it, it has some major changes. So some of the things that we'll talk about are the ability of the State Archives to update the archive statutes to account for electronic records. This bill talks about the proposed changes that would bring the statutes up to date or make them easier to understand and more consistent. An effective date is supplied. Also, this bill replaces the Division of Archives Records Management and centralized microfilm with the word State Archives. As you look through the bill here, you'll see that repeatedly. Added digital or electronic to the list of public records formats to bring statutes into alignment with the Public Records Act, WS 16-4201. Added language is also included in this bill to include digital repositories as one of the types of state record centers the director has the right to establish and operate, which is a change. It also, this bill also modifies the language throughout the statute in indicating that records may be microfilmed or scanned, not just microfilmed. This bill also updated the name Central Microfilm Division to the State Imaging Center to better describe the work being done here. So I think, Mr. Chairman, rather than going through page by page, I wanted to do a couple of major changes here. And as you look through the bill, you'll first of all see that a lot of places where it said microfilm, they'll add scan, or they'll add, like on page 2, line 10, it says scan on page 8, on line 8, and on line 10 it has digital or electronic. And that's gone through, that goes through the whole part of the bill. On page 3, on line 9, they no longer call this the board, they call this the commission, which is the commission of the state, which is the commission. Let's see here. One of the big changes here is on page 6, and here it talks about on page 6, line 5, the director has the right of reasonable access to and may examine all public records in Wyoming. He shall examine into and report to the commission on their condition. This is a continuation, but it's kind of a change also. And on page 8, hereby it is one of the newest things. On page 8, line 8, it talks about the records committee is created to be composed of a director or his deputy, the attorney general or his appointee, and the director of the State Department of Audit or his appointee. These committees shall serve without any additional salary. The records committee on line 16 says the records committee shall meet upon call by the chairman at least once every quarter. So this is a change in the way things have been done before, as far as I can tell. The records committee shall approve, modify, or disapprove the recommendations on retention schedules of all public records and act upon a request to destroy any public records. This is on page 9, line 3. Any modification or request or recommendation shall be approved by the head of the agency or originating the request or the recommendation. Also, on page 9, line 9, it says the department now shall provide forms approved by the records committee upon which it shall prepare recommendations to the committee in cooperation with the records office. On page 13, it says the records committee may issue to the State Department agencies and political subdivisions thereof guidelines and best practices on management. One other change, if you give me just a second here, please. On page 13, toward the very end of the bill here, on line 6, it says, the clerk of the district court shall not modify microfilm or micrograph, photograph, or all these other things that's crossed out or reproduced the clerk of district court shall not reproduce for official record purposes the files of any action or proceeding kept in his office until 2 years have lapsed since the initial filing in the action or the proceeding. The clerk of district court may make certified or other copies or documents in his office for individuals. This is a change also. So, Mr. Chairman, it's a little complicated, and I haven't had a chance to fully digest all this. If this isn't good enough for you, my explanations here, I'd be glad to stand up tomorrow and answer any other questions. There's nothing. There are some minor changes here. This bill was unanimously approved by the committee, both in the interim and this morning. So I don't see there's any reason that we need to keep harping on it. So Mr. Chairman, I would just ask your indulgence and go ahead and move this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bernard. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think I'm on and against this bill. This is an issue that TRW has been dealing with for almost 20 years now, and that is, how do you retain the records of the state? The State Archives Office wants to get away from paper. They want to get away from microfilm. But the fact is, that is the actual representation is sitting there. What this bill would allow would allow them to scan it and put it into some sort of electronic form. Okay, well, that's hunky-dory. Let's say we had decided to do that 20 years ago and we decided to put all the archives on a floppy disk. Anybody here have a floppy disk reader? And the kind of, or let's say an eight-track tape. The problem with technology like this is that it's ever moving. And if you decide or give the authority here to the state archivist or that committee to decide to put it on whatever conveyance they put it on, they decide to put it on at the time, there's a real good chance that that's going to be obsolete 20 years after. One of the aspects of archives is the fact you can go into it 100 years, 120 years after the fact and look at it. This would get rid of that ability. The only alternative is to put it up to the cloud. Well, now you're putting our archives on somebody else's server. The thing that really bothers me about this is the language where then they're allowed to dispose of the original. And it doesn't stop that from anything. So can the state constitution then be disposed of? What about the act of suffrage, which is a unique document? I've seen that. I went over to archives. Any one of us can go over and see it. I had copies made. That's great. According to this, they can just dispose of it, according to however they want to do that. And I don't know if I want to give that authority to a committee.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I thought the previous speaker from Little Goose was going to talk about state maps, because I would think he would not want state maps electronically kept either. As I understood this from the interim committee, the state has asked them to do a state imaging center. And they would do imaging for more than just their organization. They would do it for everybody. So I think they're going to have a bigger operation than just a one department operation. So that state imaging center is going to image for a lot of people, and they're going to have the responsibility of doing it.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been much ado about keeping records, scanning records. It comes down to the simple fact this bill clarifies archaic languages and simplifies the ability of the Commission and the archives to save important things in a more expedient and easier manner. I realize the technology could change in 10 years or 20 years or tomorrow, for that matter. It was discussed in the committee, and that's why the terms electronic is used. We would hope that electricity will still be here in 10 years. There will be, and it allows them, different means of archiving things. It's just simplification and the fact that we have so much paper, we can do it now easier through, say, one of the local servers south of Cheyenne. And it's not the point of destroying anything. If it needs to be destroyed, then it probably isn't worth keeping, but an electronic record of it will always be available. It's simply cleanup. That's pretty much the end of it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this was a discussion that we had years ago, well, probably 10 years ago, on appropriations, and some of the good arguments that the senator from Sheridan brought forth were prevalent there. But the problem that we were beginning to have even 10 years ago was trying to find replacement parts for the microfiche machines and what you can do there. So you've got some not only archaic language, but you got some archaic machines that may or may not be serviceable. And back at that point in time, the cost of storage was pretty expensive. And so you had this problem that every 5-10 years there'd be a fairly large appropriation to switch over to the next greatest type of electronic storage. But storage costs have reduced dramatically. There's a lot of other ways to access storage rather than owning it. The ability to have redundancy in storage as far as different servers, whether it's a cloud over at Laramie in Cheyenne or different geographical areas, that exists. That didn't exist 10 years ago. I have some concerns about the disposal of some very historic documents, and I think that we need to look at an amendment if this moves forward. Certainly work with the good senator from Sheridan to try to make an allowance for some of those historical documents that we always want to preserve in their original form, that really speak to the heritage of this state. And I think that's extremely important. I think that we do need to consider that. If it isn't considered in this bill, I think that's something that we should work on second reading. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize that I maybe didn't make this clear. And in response to the good senator from up north, I'd like to read this on page 5, starting on line 9. It says, maintain necessary facilities for the review of records approved for destruction and their economical disposition by any method approved by the Records Committee. This doesn't say they're going to destroy just any record. All these records are still going to be examined and saved. And then down on page 5 again, on line 18, it says, the director shall collect, arrange, and make available to the public at reasonable times in his office or in original or reproduced form all records in his custody not restricted by law, including official records of the state and its political subdivisions of the United States or foreign nations. He is the legal custodian of all records in the custody of the commission. So we're not going to just take and wholesale destroy a lot of records. We're going to review them. And the main purpose of this paragraph here is the county clerks in different subdivisions from year to year, after year, after year, after year, have all these records sitting there, and this allows for their disposition. That's all that one paragraph says. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I listened to my distinguished colleague from Sheridan County, and I think he may be onto something. I think we better be pretty cautious with this bill. I'm not sure we ought to kill it here in committee of the whole. I think maybe you could save it with some amendments, maybe. But I am concerned not only with electronic storage, that the means of accessing it may become obsolete and unavailable, but my understanding, and I'm no expert in this area, but my understanding is after a certain period of time, there is some risk that the electronic things will have things go wrong with it and not be available in a fully reliable form. So I'd like to know, is that a valid fear? I understand it'll be a lot easier for them to put everything in electronic form, but is that really at this point a viable long-term method of protecting particularly some of the critical documents?
Further discussion? Senator Perkins. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 27, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Go ahead, Senate File 27 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like privilege of the floor, if I may.
You may.
My fellow senators, I would ask you to join me in welcoming a guest, Mr. Mark Wilson of Buffalo, Wyoming. He is head of our Juvenile Justice Committee and is additionally the host of the morning show on KBBS. Mark Wilson.
All right.
I'd also ask that if he wants to do a profile of the Wyoming senator for Johnson County and approaches you for an interview, I'd ask if you might exaggerate my accomplishments and understate my errors. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. All right. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 40. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 40, Military Department Record Keeping, an act relating to the Military Department, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, was referred to Committee Number 8, which returns a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee in the whole rise to report, it do so with a do-pass motion on Senate File 40, Military Department Record Keeping. There is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read it in at this time.
Senate File 40, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 40, and for explanation of the bill and the amendment, I would request that the good Senator Agar take those duties.
Senator Agar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to start by pointing out that this file is a result of an interim study, and I would like to point everybody's attention to some verbiage on the fiscal note. This bill updates the language for electronic records, which is currently being accomplished, and the authorization for supervision of this section to be assigned to Veterans Commission. The section is forecast to operate relatively the same as it historically has. What we're going to be dealing with is some changes in verbiage and some additional verbiage in Statute 19-7-103 and 19-14-107. And I'd like to just walk you through the bill, and then you'll see why the amendment is relevant as we get to that verbiage. In Romanet 3, we see that we're simply adding the verbiage to allow them to become electronic in their record keeping. We move down to Romanet 14. Once again, we see we're allowing them to become electronic and also work with cooperation and assistance from other government agencies to do so. We also see that we're changing the verbiage to veterans who declare Wyoming as their residence upon separation of the military. Now, as we move on to Romanet 15, we read through the verbiage there, and we're giving him the authority to properly dispose or preserve the documents. Now, this is where our amendment becomes important, because we asked, where does that authority come from? And we amended it needs to legally come from the law. With that, may I ask that we dispose of the amendment?
The amendment's been moved. It has been moved. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 40, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 40 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, as we move down to line 20 through 23, we see that we're moving the responsibility to supervise these documents from the Adjutant General to the Veterans Commission. And so we have deleted some language and we have inserted some new language to allow so. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will stand for question.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I understand what the bill does. My question would be why.
Senator Agar.
Mr. Chairman, I was not present during the discussions of the interim committee, but my take from our committee meeting yesterday was to simplify their record-keeping process.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason why primarily is that originally the duties of record-keeping for soldiers' records, you know, so they could be passed on to the VA or other places. The Guard originally had that duty, and it had been switched over to the Veterans Commission when they had the reorganization from the federal government. And so we're catching up with that reorganization. The Veterans Commission has the responsibility to make sure and maintain those records, and when anybody needs them for, you know, benefits or anything like that, then through the electronic process, which is how the federal government transfers all of those records, and that's how it's transferred, you know, to the VA in different areas where they need to know the identification, need to know the history of the soldier in all those regards, then the VA can, you know, expeditiously move those records to the people that need them. And so that's why. It's the function about the way it's functioned now and how that reorganization has taken place and what's taken place on the ground. So we're catching the statutes up with what is actually occurring. And that's a function about how it occurs now. And so that's why in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonflater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think since the good senator from Goshen County was present during the interim and would probably be able to answer this, what I have a question about is on page 2, line 16, 15 and 16, it says, those veterans who declare Wyoming as their residence upon separation from the military. Doesn't the Veterans Administration here, or at least our state veterans group, keep records of all veterans when they come here, and that's what they need to do? It's just not when you declare it, you come here when you separate from the military, but even the future veterans that come here, they would then also get their records. Is that true? I don't know that, but.
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, that is true. When you separate from the military, you could designate basically your home or where you're going to, and with the electronic means of disseminating those records, then you have a lot of folks that will, you know, be stationed in F.E. Warren, you know, and then they'll transfer out someplace else. But they really love Wyoming. They want to make Wyoming their home. So when they come back to make Wyoming their home, they designate Wyoming as basically their last residence. And so all those records would come into the Wyoming system, and they can utilize the Wyoming system for their different veteran benefits.
Senator Von Flatiron.
So, Mr. Chairman, should that have or future military veterans that move here or in the future? It just seems to me that it only includes keeping records of the veterans that declare Wyoming upon separation from the military and not those that should come here and then have to be put on the rolls anyway. But it seems to me they should keep records for everybody, every veteran living in Wyoming.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to get with the veterans, Director Barbara Bolton and find out whether or not that's the function that they're doing. I think it probably is right now, but I'm not sure the process which the military operates on, whether they can change their designation. I think they probably can, but we've got some military officers in here that might be able to tell us whether or not that's the case. So.
Can you tell us? No? Can't tell us? Oh, you never looked? Yeah, no. Okay.
Further discussion on the bill. Further discussion.
Oh, what about the amendment?
Yes. Senator Barnard.
Oh, okay.
I separated from the Army. It was made clear to me that my home of record was an important thing. And a lot of the people who do separate from the Army want to have Wyoming as their home of record because there's no state income tax.
Thank you, Senator Barnard. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I know for a fact, because we just worked on a new memorial at War Memorial Stadium. We moved that memorial. And the veterans and the Veterans Commission wanted to place a kiosk there for veterans in the state, and they did not have a database that they could tap into, and it's something that they are developing. So it's something that they would like. They really don't, and I don't know how all our records get to the Veterans Commission and to Larry Barterbolt's office, but the records right now are coming in, but they don't have a great process for doing that. I think it's a funding issue.
Call for the question.
Question having been called, did we dispose of the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. All right, question having been called, a motion to adopt, let's see here. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 40, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 40 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration
Mr. Chairman.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 53. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 53, Veterans Hiring Preference, an act relating to veterans, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. Was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a do-pass motion on Senate File 53, Veterans Hiring Preferences. There was also a standing committee amendment. I ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in.
Senate File 53, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 53, and for explanation of the bill and the amendment, I would turn that duty over to the good Senator Baldwin.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have before you Senate File 53. It's always an honor to honor the veterans, and this bill helps us to honor the veterans. It deals with the hiring preferences brought to us by the veterans at Wyoming Veterans Commission. Excuse me. The laws about the hiring of veterans and preference are quite archaic, and they brought this to us to update some of these things and to clarify them and to codify some of the practices. Typically, throughout the system in the state of Wyoming, the public agencies don't have a unified system for qualifying veterans for positions. One of the things that this bill does is clarifies that and codifies some of those things that can be uniform across all the agencies, public agencies in the state of Wyoming. One of the other things this bill does, it talks about the residency requirements. If you read in the initial statutes, it talks about the veteran having been from Wyoming at the time of their military service. It was thought that at the moment, the point is getting qualified veterans into the state offices in Wyoming and into public service, regardless of where they served their time or where they were from when they served their time. That being important that we bring those folks in no matter where they came from. So we changed those qualifications in the statute. The third thing the bill does, currently the statute state a 5 or a 10-point preference, which is quite non-uniform, if you will, across the public service in Wyoming. Some places use points, some use percentages, some don't use anything at all, unfortunately. One of the other things this bill does is codifies that and makes this a uniform system across the state agencies. Two other things this bill does is it verifies and adequately describes who this law applies to. Right now, there are state agencies that apply the law and do this adequately. Well, there are some agencies that unfortunately don't use the law and don't adequately ascribe to these preferences. And the final thing that the bill does is it improves the archaic language of the widow and widower, and we'll identify that as we walk through the bill. And first of all, we'll get right to the amendment and get it out of the way. If you look on page 3, one of the things that brought up concern in the committee was on line, starting at line 9 and working down through the percentage system, is that there was a question of whether the veteran, a non-disabled veteran, receives a 5% preference while the disabled veterans receives 10% preference. There was a question because of the language in the original. If you read on line 9, it says, and if the veteran has a service-connected disability. There was a question of whether it was an additive disability. In other words, if the veteran has a disability, whether he receives the 5% and the 10%. We clarified that on line 9 by separating these sentences, and rather than make it a run-on sentence, we separated it and ended it after line 7. Over a non-veteran and started a new sentence on line 9 stating a veteran has a service disconnected ability of 10%, then the advantages shall be 10%. So we just separated those things. So I'd like to dispose of the amendment now if we could.
The question, having been called, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 53, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 53 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you go to page 2, you'll find there's a lot of crossed-out language there. In line 1, it just simply states, in every public department of all public works in Wyoming. When we get to the end of the bill, those are defined later in the bill. The second thing, and there's concern about crossing out the widows, that too will be defined towards the end of the bill. Simply states that they have a preference prior to the interview process. Now, one of the big concerns in our discussions in the committee was this preference is a one-time, it's a leg up for the veteran that's coming out of the service, going into a state agency prior to the interview process using the 5% or the 10% preference. That preference being given when he first enters any state agency or as they're described later in the bill. So he has that preference, or he or she has that preference going into the department, so they can gain an advantage and get that start when they're coming out of the service with a great number of skills, but they don't necessarily identify to the private sector and what we have in the state agency has for skills. So this gives them a start and gives them a build-up in the agency to get going and build their own resumes. If you go down on line 2 further, again, we've just stricken out a lot of the archaic language, and one of the important things that it notes there, if the disabilities do not material interfere with the performance of the duties. Okay. And then continuing on the bill, you will find that the public department on line four, we define, on page four, excuse me, we define public department as quite an extensive inclusion. There includes the state of Wyoming or any of its branches, agencies, municipalities, counties, school districts, political subdivisions, special districts, community college districts, and the University of Wyoming. And the second definition that we talked about there, it starts on line nine, what a veteran exactly means, and that is any member of the United States military establishment honorably discharged from service of a surviving spouse of any such deceased member of the United States military establishment. Fellow senators, I believe that this is an important tool for us to honor our veterans and for them to get a start in a state agency and establish her criteria to a productive career. And with that, I would stand for question.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. Senator Wasserberger, you have been standing for several minutes. Were you stretching or ready to go?
I was ready to go, Mr. Chairman.
That was an early jump.
Mr. Chairman, I'll pass the baton on back to the relay behind me, if you'd like.
We'll be right back to you. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I have a question for the good senator from Lincoln County. My question is, we have some governmental agencies using this veterans preference and some not. Why are they not using it? Was there any testimony on that issue in committee?
Let's go with Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just allow the good senator from the West to make a little bit of a list on a couple of questions. My question revolves around a little bit of confusion. I just want to make sure I read this bill correctly. With the language that we have stripped out on page 3, I believe that what this says is to a human resource department at one of the colleges, the university, whatever, that means that an out-of-state veteran would receive preference over somebody, for example, in your community. And I just want to make sure that I'm reading this bill correctly, that we would give preference no matter where that veteran is from, over the top of, say, a Wyoming resident.
Senator Perkins.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to kind of tag on and just to expand my good fellow senator from Natrona County's concerns, as I understand that, the way that it will work is not only would it do that, but it's also on line 15, page 2, we strike out on widows. So the preference used to be extended to widows of veterans. That also would exclude now widows of veterans from the preference. And just to give to bring that home, I'm thinking about my good friends and all of our good friends in Campbell County, the north of here, who and some of those adjoining counties that saw significant losses of employment in their community, went from where you couldn't find enough folks to work to where a lot of people were leaving town and looking for jobs. And so, as I understand, that idea would be that this veteran, whoever they come, because the one-year requirement is removed, that veteran, wherever they come from, would have that preference over a community member, a young person, a widow of a veteran, despite how long that they had been in Wyoming.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add on to that, how many of our state agencies have a numerical system that they utilize? And it's an existing law, so maybe someone could clarify that on page 2, line 1, every public department and upon all public works. You know, we define public department. We don't define public works. I believe what that says is it's only dealing with government agencies, but we want to be sure that we don't include the private sector contractors bidding on public department or public works. I want some clarification on that point, too, if you would, please.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the majority floor leader's concern is treated or answered on page 4, line 10, I'm sorry, line 11, where the widow, it's a honorably discharged from service or a surviving spouse. So they would have the status of a veteran.
The problem I have with that, and I'll be bringing a second reading amendment tomorrow, assuming this bill passes, is words to the effect that they were married to them at the time of their service. If somebody's 25 years past their service and they marry late in life, and then the widow or widower survives them, I don't know why they should necessarily have a preference over anybody else.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious also about whether other states have this practice of allowing for an out-of-state veteran or veteran's widow to be able to apply into another state without even necessarily having been to that state. And this change is, I think, the one that concerns me most. And I know that some of my colleagues in Natrona County have expressed this, but I'd like more detail on the discussion related to this. You know, there's 20 million veterans. I don't know how many spouses are out there. And the idea that a widow of a veteran in a state on the East Coast that's never been to Wyoming would end up with a priority over somebody who grew up in Wyoming for one of these very limited number of jobs when you look at the total number in the state of Wyoming is of concern. So I'd like to hear more about the discussion as well.
Senator Von Flater.
I just want to know, since we struck the language at what the conversation was about the honorable or dishonorable discharge, because original language had honorable discharge or had, yes, honorably discharged, and so you'd be given a preference to somebody possibly non-resident that was dishonorably discharged because they were a veteran.
Anyone else to add to this impressive list of questions? Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to grab a couple of these because they were answered in interim. Let's start on page 4, though, and let's all take a little time here. I'll read through what a veteran means. It answers the spousal question. It answers the honorably discharged. Veteran means a member of the United States military establishment, honorably discharged from the service, or surviving spouse. And we went with surviving spouse because that's more of a modern terminology, or any such deceased member of the United States military establishment. So that I think that answers some of the questions that we had here. The question as to, well, why are we letting all these people from around our country come here to Wyoming and have a preference? Well, folks, I guess we look at it as that this is something for veterans. This is something for folks that, you know, protect our freedoms, fight in foreign wars, and it's the same thing when you look at the old GI Bill. These folks, it didn't make any difference what college they went to. You know, they got that right to come back and start something fresh in their life. And the reason that we have this is that a lot of these guys, they don't have a resume. They've been in the military. And so the jobs that they did, you know, just really don't apply to the private sector. And so they don't have that experience. And what this bill actually does is give these folks a foot in the door so they can start, you know, their next phase of their life. Because they spent 20 years protecting the rights of us, protecting our freedoms. And so that's the reason why you allow folks from other parts of the country to come in here and become part of Wyoming. We're a great state. We don't have a lot of influx, folks. You know, I mean, people are driving into Colorado every day. We don't have that in Wyoming every day. And we need people in our states to grow our economy. We need these people that have these special skills. But it's good to know that what this bill does is really honor those folks that have honored us with their commitment. And a lot of these folks, you know, they've had some tough times. They'll come in, they're handicapped, they're disabled, they're Purple Heart people, you know, they're Medal of Honor people, they've got ribbons on their chest that actually, you know, means that they did something for us and made our lives a lot more comfortable and protected our rights and freedoms.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for the chairman of the Military Committee. As I read the bill, it has a 5% preference for veterans and a 10% preference if they are disabled, but that's only for prior to the interview process. It's not, the interview takes place and then there's no preference. It only gets them into the interview. Is that how I'm reading this bill?
Yeah. Yes, Senator Meyer.
No, no, it's for the interview process to get them in the door. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, from what I understand, it's actually for the interview process. It applies for the initial appointment or initial employment with a public department, and it's in the numerical scoring system used in the hiring process. So that's actually in the hiring process, but it's used in that hiring process. So from how the general explained it to me and to the committee in the interim is that it gets you in the first cut, that it necessarily doesn't get you the job. And so that's how it was explained to us. And if it's different than that, I'll certainly get back to you, but that's how it was explained. Another thing that I want to draw your attention to is some discussion that we had in the committee about whether there's one or two or three bites at the apple as far as going to public employment. And it's for the initial one only. So, and if you look down on the bottom page, three on lines 21 and 22, it says, no preference under this section shall be given to a veteran currently employed by a public department. So if that person wants a preference, the next time he applies to a public department, he either has to quit his existing job or be out of service to that particular department before the preference would apply. So, you know, you can't, and it's not used for promotion. Once you're in there, you can't say, well, I want a promotion, the preference applies in the promotion. No, it doesn't apply for the promotion. So we put some safeguards in there to say that this is really something to get the person in the door and to get their next phase of life started, and we want them to start it in Wyoming.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I read that differently. The question from Campbell County was, does it just give them an advantage to get an interview, or does it have an advantage for getting the job? And I say it has an advantage for getting the job. It talks about the hiring process and the interview process and those kind of things in there. And the reason it says the initial appointment or initial employment is because it's for his first time. Say he's going to apply for the health department. His initial time, he can use that advantage, but he can't use it after that, as the chairman says, for the next promotion. So initial is just addressing that. So he does use it for his hiring process, not just for getting in the door to get an interview.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer, well, excuse me, Senator Rothfuss,
okay.
How about if we start?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm still curious to hear if there had been discussion about other states doing this and how that is implemented, whether any of our regional states have a circumstance where preference is given to out-of-state employees. The concern I have is imagine that you're doing a hiring and you're expecting to interview five candidates. And then you open it up so that there's preference around the country, and there are 20 million eligible applicants from the rest of the country that would have a preference and a limited number from within the state of Wyoming. I think it would be very difficult for anyone in the state of Wyoming to even show up for that interview if you have five interview slots. So thinking it through, just the sheer number of eligible candidates from around the country that have never been to Wyoming relative to those in Wyoming kind of swamps it out. And when you see that under a circumstance in paragraph 3 where there is no scoring system and actually lays out the concept that you just give preference to a veteran if everything else is equal. Well, for many jobs, obviously, you'll have two candidates that are more or less equal, and you'll end up selecting this out-of-state veteran. So I'd like to hear more about how this has worked in other states, and perhaps some smaller rural states that would be more similar to us that have implemented a similar policy, and, Mr. Chairman, whether or not that has ended up with a situation where local residents have basically been shut out of the application pool if they're not a veteran.
Thank you. If I could direct our attention to the President. President Bebout, do you have a privilege of the floor you'd like to take?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. However, I think it might be more appropriate to have whom he represents have that distinct honor, but I'm going to take it anyway.
You're the President, sir.
Members of the Senate, may I have privilege of the floor? Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, we have with us someone that's very distinguished in his service to the great state of Wyoming. He served, he did serve in the House with Senator Scott way back when, and then he saw the light like a lot of us did and went over to the Senate where he served with a distinguished career. He went through the leadership chairs, was president of the Senate. And it was in 1990 and 91 or 89 and 90 and 91. He was a president of this body and served the state very well, an incredible person, a personal friend. He's also with the reason he is so successful, and that's his wife. Ladies and gentlemen, Deemer and Susie True, please stand up.
A tiger by the tail. Good luck to you all.
Welcome to the Senate. Good to see you. Okay, back. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to clear it up as far as the language in the bill as far as when the preference takes place. And if you look on page 2, line 6 and 7, it says, veterans shall have a preference prior to the interview process. So it isn't prior to the hiring process, it's prior to the interview process. And so how it works is the preference points percentages are applied prior to the interview. And so you may have, 10 or 12 people, and the preference that gets winnowed down to maybe 6 or 7 or something, it's applied during that process, so they can actually get their foot in the door for the interview. So that's when it's applied. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Baldwin.
One final question, I think, that was questioned here, and that was why all agencies are not using, Mr. Chairman, are not using the point system. And what has happened, and it talks about it in the bill if you read through, but a lot of agencies have moved away from an examination, which used to be done across the board, but a lot of agencies have moved away from an examination using a point system and scoring those examinations. And moving away from those examinations, they no longer have a point system, and so it was hard to apply this law and this statute to those. And the second thing that I would add there, I think the good chairman answered most of the other questions, the question with the out-of-state question and the residents and non-state, what's going on in other states probably needs to be addressed and looked at, but that we can do down the road or in the next few days. The other question was, we had a representative from the school on the other side of the hill to the west here who was set in on the discussion, who talked with us, and we did ask that gentleman, and he said that this was good with that facility, with that school. And so with that, if there's no more discussion, I would call for a question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 53, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 53 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Oh. It's not my first name.
Well, that'd be Senator Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, one more time. Take two. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 5, do pass amended. Senate File 7, do pass amended. Senate File 13, do pass. Senate File 26, do pass. Senate File 39, do pass amended. Senate File 27, do pass. Senate File 40, do pass amended. Senate File 53, do pass amended. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Do we have any messages to read in or standing reports from standing committee?
January 12, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred Senate File 43, Alcoholic Beverages Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Conflict, Senator Case. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Hicks, did you wish to be recognized? Mr. Majority, Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. President, I know if this is the right time, but I would like to have Senate File 72, the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund Large Project Funding, re-referred to your Senate Committee Number 2 Appropriations.
Without objection, so noted. Mr. Majority Floor, I believe that clears the desk.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. on Friday, January the 13th.
10 a.m.?
Announcements. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President.
Yeah, L-54.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, will have a special meeting jointly with the folks down the hall on Monday, January 16th, 2017 at 1 o'clock p.m. in Jonah Room L-54. This will be an informational meeting on school funding with folks from the AG's office to answer questions related to the Campbell decisions, constitutionality, and some of the other key issues. All legislators are encouraged to attend.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, your Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet Friday, January 13th at 8 a.m. at the Jonah Room L-54, the big room, to consider the following bills. Senate File 32, Peace Officer Recording. Senate File 81, Circuit Court Judge Salaries. And Senate File 59, Government Ethics, Clerks of the District Courts.
Senator Vice President.
Mr. President, your Minerals Committee, number 9, in Economic Development, by the way, 15 minutes after noon recess tomorrow, Friday, in Jonah Room S18 to consider Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue State Share, Senate File 68, Net Metering Generation Capacity, Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Room S27. First, we'll finish our work on Senate File 63, Department of Family Services Statutory Amendments, and then we'll take up Senate File 62, Telepharmacy Amendments, and Senate File 66, Title 25, Payment Obligation Federal Entities.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 4:30 down at L-55, the JAC room, where the Senate Appropriations Committee will take up Senate File 2, Legislative Appropriations. In addition, tomorrow morning and tomorrow at lunch hour, we will be continuing agency hearings.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, your Education Committee number 4 will be meeting Friday, January 13th at 9 a.m. in General Room S-19 to consider Senate File number 34, Digital Information Protection Act, and Senate File 36, Education Leader Evaluation and Support.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, your committee number 5 will be meeting at 4:30 in room L-54 to review a presentation on the structure and the function of the Wyoming Department of Agriculture. All legislators are invited.
Any other announcements? You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, January the 13th.